Mr. Allgood, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
I was born in Norwich.
Which year was this?
1933.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Norwich?
Yes, sir.
Did the Second World War affect your life as a schoolboy very much?
Yes, we had several air raids in the Isle of Wight School. Our lessons were disrupted. There were many notes. We had to go down the shelter, and the sleep was disrupted.
Did any bombs fall near you during the war?
Well, the house I lived in, actually, before I got there, the house adjoined had been struck by a bomb previously. So that was in the area.
What was the address of that house?
The house I got bombed was 43 St John Street, and I lived at 41.
So where were you at the time when the neighbouring house was struck?
I was in this next street shelter.
Was that a public shelter?
Yes.
What were they like to shelter in?
Well, they were big, tall buildings. I used to think they were something like 8-10 foot wide, and about 40-50 foot long, with about 8 foot high. But, you know, they were very primitive, just wooden benches and wooden bolts if you were down there all night. And like everything else was in the middle of the street, after you get through to everything else.
Was there any heating in the shelters?
No, nothing luxury like that. Unless you took a power pack around, perhaps.
Did people do that?
Occasionally, yeah. That's called it. In them days, you couldn't get power packs, so it is a lot of either.
Was it the bombing frightening for you?
Well, it was until I got down the shelter, and I felt very safe in the shelter for some reason. But, you know, later on, I mean, the shelter consists of about 8 or 9 inches of concrete thickness. I suppose if I got a direct hit, that'd be through. But I was about 7 or 8 at the time, I suppose. And that didn't scare me that much. I don't think I was really. That one until you came. The only thing that worried me was when you came out of the shelter, the first thing you looked at is if your house was still up, you know. Or
did you know of anybody who was a casualty from the bombings?
I had an uncle up, lived up the road as Weymouth Road. And I should think that's the only bomb that landed that area, that landed on his house, that killed his wife, my aunt.
Which road was that?
Weymouth. That's up Latin Estate.
Was the centre of Norwich much damaged?
Oh, that's terrible. That was nearly, that's similar to the Blitz of London. I mean, not nowhere near as big, obviously, but for a small town. The whole centre of Norwich was really devastated with bombs and damaged sites. There's a big department of stores there that I don't know.
Did you go short of any foods in the war?
Well, I suppose we did really. We had just a meager ration. We didn't go hungry, I suppose, because you know, your parents in them days, they said you were hungry, you short themselves. But we did have. I had a. There was one. When I was at school, if you'd been involved in any of these bombings, you got. Full pass off for America, and they just that one didn't know that I've had a school give them out. And if you had any relatives in the armed forces, like you used to get them.
Did you ever get any?
Yeah, I got one because I had a brother who was killed in the RAF at the time. He's 18 at the time, and I had another brother in the army.
What did the food parcels have in them?
That's just corned beef, things like that, nuts out of them, and we wrote candy and what have you. You know, that was more for the ones we got, the more for kids rather than for the average and grown up, or maybe you know, they call it candy and tins, what do you call them, sweets and what have you. And of course, children, we have to have children, we don't know, yeah.
Was the war a miserable time for you or a happy time?
Very miserable. I just had my brother at 18 hours, remember? He's been coming up on my door and told my dad that my brother had been killed. Scattered blow. I had another brother in the army. He was in all the places I didn't know where he was. I was up to remember that. And I had another brother, the middle brother, in the RAF. He was in Canada, so he was virtually a brother. So I sort of a mixture of a luck, you know.
So was your 18-year-old brother in the Navy?
No, he was in the RAF. And he got shot down at Scotland Scatterfly, I think, or something like that. I always remember because they gave him a regimental film for the house. And the guy had a bar and marched it, so he was the first. And then he felt very proud of him. She was not a man, I think.
How did your mother take it?
She was devastated, obviously, you know.
Now, can you tell me how you came to be in the army yourself?
Oh, definitely, certainly, I called up.
When was that?
1951, 52, I think.
How did you feel about being called up?
At the time, very apprehensive. I think you could say this afterwards, you're glad you never missed it. I had problems. Because my mother was a widow, I was about the only one living with Thomas, I think. And the money was very short. And the place I worked for at the time, although the law stated that if you got called up, they had to keep you there and give you your job back when you came back, feeling a bit naive, I signed a letter there. After it signed, say that when I came back, I'd forfeit this right. The problem was I got called up, and I don't know if that was 3 months or longer. The date you get where you're called up, so I thought, well, if they put me out of work now, then they would start me on for another 2 months or whatever it was. So I done it, and when I came home, I was a lot older, although I was in the army for 2 years. I aged about 10, I think. And I virtually went down there and I told them what to do with it. You know, I wasn't very pleased, but we got to that. It was a boring time for my mother because, you know, I'd been out there in Korea. And, she used to send me, I think it was 2,600 a week we got, wages. She used to send me 2 fives, wood bombs, and everything else she used to send me.
Where did you go for your basic training?
Northamptonshire. I went to the Northampton Regiment. Had to go to Northamptonshire where I spent the first 6 weeks. And there, there was a bit of doubt whether I was going to Nair or Korea for training. And there we were sent to Boatswain Edmunds, which we were then transferred from the Northamptonshire Regiment to the Royal Norfolk Regiment.
What was the basic training like?
Oh, that's, you've seen the films and heard about it, that's as bad as they are actually say, because you've got young lance corporals who thought that, you know, they actually frightened the young lads, they did. But you go, but I mean, I don't know if it's a real thing, but they're very. You used to get jankers, so if you're silly little things, actually, you know, had a dirty hat badge, and you get on 14 days, you have to report to the guardos about 3 different times during the evening. So consequently, what you were doing over there, you didn't have the time to do your own kit. So consequently, once you got on there, you had a job of getting off, because while you were on there, perhaps. You're rushing about, you come back, the lights out, and you pump back all your belts, stuff like that, and then you'd be on again.
And this was in Northampton, was it?
Northampton, that was in Northampton, yes. The Boatswain Edmunds weren't too bad, because then you're old soldiers, then you're done 6 weeks, so you're
Did you get put on jankers yourself?
The other funny thing, I didn't tell I got up on was when I was in Old Farm.
What was that for?
And that was something which was so silly. My friend laid on the bunk beside me, and he got to go down the town, and he couldn't. You had to show your pass paper as you went out, you see. And he couldn't find this. So he said, could you buy it and then go? So I lent him mine. He actually thought he'd go over out, and they asked me his name. I remember his name was Kelly. And he said his name, Kelly, and she was he's got his paper. But an idiot, he went over there and he asked me his name, and he said, oh, good. And the sergeant of the guard there was my own platoon sergeant, so he knew down on him. Well, yeah, having said that, I sort of went out before the company commander, and he explained, you do realise a lot of silly people, because he said, if anything had happened to him in town, I mean, got killed or whatever, the first thing I'd done, look at his pay book, and the next of kin would have been told. The next of kin being Mrs. Orford, you see, so, you know, so, fair enough.
What did you have to do on Jankers?
You have to go over there. This is the biggest problem. You have to be over there at a certain time when the bugle blows, you jank a call, and then they use some silly little jailbreak and clean buckets and stuff like that, half hour or something like that.
You mean some pointless job?
Yeah.
Do you think the basic training in Northampton did you any good?
As a soldier, that did, yes. Yeah.
In what way?
You sort of virtually obeyed orders without thinking about them, you know. You don't argue. Though you get told to do something, you do it, and that's it, because you don't get time to think, you know. I'm not saying I was right or wrong, but I think as a soldier that did help. That's one thing I think in the army you did lack. You lacked the need to think so much.
How were you on the range with the rifle?
Oh, it was pretty good. I was not bad to go for. The only thing I had a problem about that was the recoil of the rifle used to bang your shoulder. See, there again, they used to say, the instructors used to tell you to pull the rifle into your shoulder so you don't get the recoil. But once you've had it in your shoulder, if it's sore, you're inclined to try and hold it right by it. And of course, I get worse. But if you did what they say afterwards, with benefit of hindsight, that wouldn't have happened in the first place.
Did you have any friends from home with you in the army?
No, I didn't know anyone from Norwich.
So, where did they all come from, the people in your squad?
Luton. I thought 70% of them came from London, but well, Northampton, they've got a local line there. Lincolnshire, another one from Lincolnshire.
Who was the NCO in charge of you when you were doing basic training?
I think we called me that name. I mean, in Northampton, the sergeant was quite sort of pleasant chap. That's the little lance corporal was underneath him that used to sort of terrorize him. I mean, he terrorized one of them there, I don't know what exactly happened, but he got taken off the trainer as a trainer and put with his regiment. I don't know what regiment it was, but they cut him all over and he was sent back to the battalion, so he wasn't very proper. I mean, they used to get, they all found that they used to pick on the yard, squatty, perhaps some little thing. They said he's dirty or something, and then they'd match him in the shower and scrub and all this thing. And it all went on. That never happened now, obviously.
Would he be dirty?
Well, he might have been, perhaps, I don't know. I mean, they said they used to see, but that struck me. They got to find one in every batch of, you know, to set an example to, I don't know, with that sort of set procedure for them to do. But I talked to the chap and he came back, you see, because that's embarrassment for the poor devil himself, anyway.
Was there any beating, or was it just verbal?
Well, that verbal, I wouldn't dare touch it. I believe in many doors, I didn't stick my hand on them. But like just dragging me in the shower, that was bad enough, right? And then some poor chap come back, when he came back, and they had all the clothes on, they'd been in the shower and all the bash with that, I thought, without any help.
So what were you supposed to be doing at Bury?
Bury, that was, you'd done your basic training at Northampton at Bury, then you went on to go like the extensive club, which should have been 10 weeks, I don't know if that was, I think, about 8 or 9 weeks, yeah. And that's for sort of more advanced training. You've got that. You've done a certain amount of square bash, as they call it, you know, marching and that, but also it was actually boy for shooting, what have you.
Did you prefer it at Bury?
As opposed to Northampton, yeah. Mainly because I was able to go home every weekend, virtually nearly every weekend, and I wasn't all the guy. You'd get a pass, Bury pass. You'd leave at home, I think it was early Saturday morning on the train, or late Friday night, and you'd get home. It was early out Friday, so you'd leave at 8. You'd go home about midnight on the Friday night, and you catch the 11 o'clock train back again on a Sunday night. And that's a long walk from the railway station at Bury to the barracks, as you all know. I think perhaps now I was just thinking, that was it worth it? But in the end, though, it was, obviously.
And did you go from Bury to straight to Korea?
No, no, I went to Hong Kong. That's where most of the troops at the moment were, Hong Kong. The new countries. And I was there for 2 or 3 months.
What kind of duties did you have in the new territories?
A lot of them was, you've got these outposts, you know, where the Chinese border was, and you used to sit there and watch the Chinese, and you just worked down like a tag of often what have it.
Was this with the 1st Battalion of the Royal Norfolks?
Yeah.
Any incidents that happened to you when you were on duty there?
I was in the town, I was off duty, but I was in the Carnoon, I think it was. Rinsed the pictures. And I think that was my guy, I should have had a sense. And they were sitting watching the pictures for 3 hours. And I noticed them on the screen about how much he forces all returned to units. The unit being the lowing part which took us back to the new territory, and of course being perhaps a bit naive, we sat there and we said, well, we'll see the rest of the spring. We didn't think we'd all gone, and then the lights went up a bit, we turned around and they only worked 3 in there, I think. And then we went outside, we realised, well, because the lights had started, you know, the Chinese had come down, and they'd come down from Canton, and they'd had a riot every year, apparently. And now he looks on fire, turned over, some sort of looking island there. But that was very spooky, walking down the road, you know, I mean, there's Chinese and Chinese, you know, you don't know.
So, how close to the riots did you come?
Well, look, we were walking down the street where the riot had been, you know, now I was standing there burning and turned over, but then I think that's the crowd, and then there were police in there.
Was this 1952?
Yeah, beginning of 52, I guess, yeah.
What were they rioting about?
I don't really know. I think that's just what was solved right now. I mean, that was China versus Hong Kong. I think that's hard to tell. I mean, they're Muslim students, you know, from Canton and whatever.
But you didn't have any riot duties yourself in Hong Kong? How did you get on with the Chinese generally?
Very well, actually. You know, the only Chinese we had any to do was all the people who worked on the camp and the schools. I mean, very funny was a chap, Chinese chap, which one of those old type ice cream van, and I was experiencing that kind of thing. And it sells cigarettes, everything. And of course, most of the rookies, he said, I'm playing in the week when I get paid, you see. And I'm very well with him, for some reason, I don't know, I was a boy. And he's come to my tent there in the school, out of school, and he had a list of his book, you see, and he couldn't find his soldiers. And it'd be like Private L. Flynn, Stuart Grange, and all those sort of people, you know. And I but he had a good memory because I left there and I went to back to school. I was gone for 4 weeks, I think, 5 weeks. And I came back and he remembered that I heard him for back of face straight away. I mean, for the moment, hundreds and hundreds of.
So can you tell me about getting the posting to Korea then, please?
Well, what happened from there, we moved to Korea in Japan, which is the enforcement place. In the first week we were there, we had a typhoon warning that meant boarding up all the places, all the windows, and emergency rations for the day and the night, and the next morning they were taken down again because that was sort of a false alarm. But from there I was taken, I think I don't know if I volunteered or not, but I got into a battle school at Kuramura, which is 18 miles away from this place, to go on a machine gun course for the pickers. Believe it or not, that's the same sort of gun they had up the Tiber Pass, the machine gun. And that's the funniest place I've ever been in my life. The commanding officer, which you didn't realize at the time, you'd walk in there and he'd have a pair of brown cords, brown sweater, a new hat, and a big walking stick, which they used to call a tree. And he'd walk through the camp and you'd pull past, obviously think he's a, well, you think perhaps he's a cleaner or something. I know he suddenly heard that he's boring so the sergeant maybe would come out, challenge that man for not saluting him. I mean, that's crazy it was. But then I enjoyed it there after a while because I was billeted with about a dozen Australian soldiers. And what was annoying about it was that I think they were regulars now getting about five times what was money bigger than what we were. But we had some good times, you know, the drink and the same time. Yeah. We went through the course already. That's funny, that was the third course I went on the machine gun. And then we were sent back to our.
What did you think of the Vickers machine gun?
That I wore it because you didn't get the wood put on, it was just sitting there. But they did have, you saw the bad side of it when we had a boot match, you had to carry it because the machine gun used to weigh 40 pounds and the trolley pod was 50 pounds. And then you had a petrol tank, a gallon petrol tank was used to help the vehicle. So there's 300 in a team, and you imagine that you already got the petrol tank cut in hands. The tripod was the easiest bit, a lot was heavy because you bounce it on your shoulders. Or the gun that used to change from one side to the other. And you had to march 18 miles out and back. But apart from that, I enjoyed it over there. And no people Japanese, actually. They're sort of a. Funny to say, they're more trusting, I think, you know, they're more appreciative of you, they respected you more. So we went back to JRBD, and they got all these machine gun courses, and then we got to Toussaint, Robert Toussaint, where machine gun went out the window because they didn't want the machine guns, you then give them the sting gun, which is. And then I sat on this train, and I must have been on there 10, 12, if not more hours, as it was. I come for a ride, I have had an audio. A stiff upright seat, so I don't know if they would or not, but they. And all you got was your typical British Army rations, one cheese, one jam, and one corned beef sandwich, and a mess can full of tea for it. And I think we were on there from beginning of the morning to late at night before we got up to where we were. And that was near the, I suppose it was near what was the front line, because that's where all the action was. And we were taken to the post, which was a hill, and there was this trench. Trench all the way around it. And before you had time to really get to know anyone, you had to stand through. There was to stand through every... The Chinese had a habit of attacking just as the smoke was going down at dawn and dusk, you know, that bad light. So, and then times you have to stand through your trenches. So I got in this trench, I don't know if it was a rifle or a stinger in my hand, but I stood there. Because you're on top of the hill and the barbed wire's at the bottom, you see. And I turned around and beside me was this Korean man standing there with me with a gun. Now, no one told me about it. I mean, he asked what to do before I asked, but as it happened, he stood down and they introduced you to who he was. He was he's a Republican Korean, he's a South Korean, he's one of the lads who worked on the hill, on the camp site. And he used to stand too busy, obviously, I mean, but you can't tell a South Korean from a North Korean thing. But that was a rough time, I mean, the living control, I'm not talking about the bullets, you know. You had a whole dugout in the side of the hill, and the trench all around it.
What can you say more about the living conditions you had in the front line?
Well, if you can imagine, you had this trench dug about, I suppose, 5 foot six, 6 foot, all around this top of the hill there, and off the inside, there'd be like a hole dug, I suppose, say, 6 feet, 3 feet, 6 foot to 6 foot six, and these four of us, say, sleeping there. So, I mean, you're talking about improvisation of this iron and that, and the beds and what have
you. Did you get any vermin in the trenches, like rats or cockroaches?
No, I can't remember saying them to that extent. I remember they had a trench here, I mean, that's not here, but there's a trench here, they called it the VC trench, and when you should do your 2 hour stint every month, you had to go virtually two-thirds of the way down the hill, which is down at a trench, like towards a little bay at the bottom. And there you stand your 2 hours, very close to the barbed wire and trip, you know, in case chinks came in. And that was very, very, very long to me. I could never understand why one person used to do it. And then, every time we had a little bat, the ears prick up, and then, when your relief come, if he didn't whistle, you know, that's very dangerous, I thought, because on an ocean relief, I don't want to make sure you listen and sound what they know or something, they should be. But I've seen people up there with a fixed bang that's charged at a stump of tree, because the silhouette on the sunlight in the morning. Yeah.
Did you first go into the trenches in hot weather or cold weather?
I was lucky in that aspect, I spent it all in warm weather.
In the summer?
Yeah, I didn't see any of the fitness which I got the deepest from, the coldness and all that. And I got in that aspect.
What were the Korean summers like?
Well, that was very hot. I mean, I suppose you got the cotton very 78 degrees Fahrenheit.
And which company were you in?
I think I was Baker Company at the time.
And do you remember the platoon number?
No, I don't think that's 40. I know, just if I got up there.